This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth, and certainly it's important for all people. And I will begin this program by quoting you a letter that I received at info44@davidduke.com, and by the way, we will be changing that address soon, so be sure when you send your emails to go to davidduke.com, go to email, the email button on the right, or the contact button, and then send your email that way. That way you will receive, and you will go to the right email box, and your email will not be lost in the computer ether. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's the most recent email I received. It's from an individual, quite interesting, non-European, or part European. He says, quote, being of Jamaican white descent, I would say I was not in a hurry to read your book, Jewish Supremacism. However, Dr. Duke, I must say the cover had quite a hypnotic effect, and I said to myself, why not? It's simply a book. As I began to read your book, I thought to myself, wow, this man is truly an anti-Semite. But this started to wane as I made it through the preface and the first chapter. I became very immersed in this book and came away enlightened. It's changed my outlook on America and the world in general. This book was great, Dr. Duke, just because I'm so impressed by the things that I learned and the way you express them. It's just great how you backed up every statement with facts, mostly from Jewish sources. I've recommended the book to friends of all races, and yet your name seems a bit tarnished, of course. I guess you cannot speak against the sacred cow, or your name is tarnished, no matter who you might be. And nothing is more certainly true than dealing with yourself. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Interesting letter, and today my broadcast is continuing the series on the roots of anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism? Why has there been opposition to certain elements in Jewry over the centuries? Why have Jews been kicked out of over 200 different municipalities, nations, nation-states, societies around the world? Have they always been innocent? Have Gentiles always been nothing but citadels of evil who persecuted these people for no reason, or were there elements among the Jewish population that caused a tremendous reaction? As I pointed out, most of the books, in fact, the vast majority of books on so-called anti-Semitism that you can get in your libraries or you can, you know, read in your bookstores or be recommended by your newspapers or your, for instance, the New York Times Book Review, about anti-Semitism are actually written by Jewish supremacists, Jewish radicals, generally, who support Israel, which, again, I must say, is a racial state, is a state that is based on the preservation and the advancement of Jewish genetics and discriminates against non-Jews in every respect. And they have pretty much given us the definition of what anti-Semitism is. And I noticed and I pointed out on my first broadcast in this issue that if you go to the encyclopedias and you read articles on anti-Semitism, you will read articles usually written by Jewish extremists themselves, and their reading list will almost always be a recommended list of Jewish supremacists as well. For instance, in the recent Groler's Encyclopedia, which is also in Carta, which is probably the most popular encyclopedia these days because of the Internet and Microsoft's association with it, the article is written by Eric Rosenthal. And the bibliography, the suggested reading list is Almog Shmuel, Hannah Arendt, Michael Curtis, Jacob Katz, Leonard Dernstein, J.G. Geiger, D.A. Gerber, and Leon Polakoff. Ladies and gentlemen, it's continuous. How do you judge any issue unless you get both sides? And if you read these books, the consistent principle is that anybody who had a conflict with the Jews, that they were always wrong. That is, if they were non-Jews, they were wrong, and the Jews were always innocent and very good, and the Gentiles unwittingly and unfairly and hatefully persecuted Jews for no reason. I went into some of the aspects of Jewish ethnocentrism, which causes reaction, and I showed, for instance, on my last few broadcasts, how that generally speaking, Christians were far more tolerant toward people of Jewish descent than people of Jewish descent were tolerant toward people of non-Jewish descent. For instance, in Christian lands, basically all a Jew had to do to be accepted was to convert to Christianity, to accept the religion, the mores, the values of the people who lived in the lands in which they settled and found refuge, and usually a pretty good living to boot. The difference was, of course, that Judaism practiced very much anti-Christianism. They did not seek converts, and no converts have ever risen highly in the Jewish apparatus and Jewish structure, as many Jews, by the way, have risen in Christian apparatus and in the apparatus of other religions around the world. They themselves did not seek converts. They themselves had very strong attitudes toward Gentiles, which were actually stronger and certainly more hateful than what Gentiles said against Jews. Gentiles believed that Jews were wrong by belief. Jews believed that Gentiles were wrong by blood. But today we're going to go into the by heritage, actually, just the same way Israel today, that a Jew can't marry a non-Jew. You cannot have a marriage ceremony in Israel and a recognized marriage, and there's no civil marriage in Israel, and a Jew cannot marry a Gentile in that country. In fact, a Kohanim, who is of the Jewish so-called priest class, can't even marry another practicing person of the Jewish faith, of Judaism, who in fact has a drop of Gentile blood. Now that's under the laws of the state of Israel and the system of marriage they have there. And I have a very interesting article on my website you can go to and take a look at, and it's called Not Jewish Enough to Marry a Cohen. This kind of law or regulation is very much on a par to that existed in National Socialist Germany in the 1930s and 40s. In fact, it's probably a more harsh law. The SS had a rule that you had to be of 8 generations purity to join the elite of Germany. The Jewish religion and the State of Israel says that you have to be much more than 8 generations. You can't have a drop of non-Jewish blood. But today we're going to talk about the roots of anti-Semitism involving crime and treachery and why some of these oppositions historical terms occurred against Jews. As a young boy, I grew up on movies. I never failed to go to the Saturday matinee. And over the years, movies have been my main form of entertainment, even though I've known for many years that the Jewish extremists control the movie industry. My idea of an evening out is still dinner and a movie, and of the thousands of films I've seen over the years, I have many recollections of gangster films. Now, because of those films and many newspaper and magazine articles and novels, I long associated, as a young man, organized crime with Italians, specifically with Sicilian Americans. Now, that's a common association. Gangsters are synonymous in almost everyone's mind with Italian features and Italian accents. One makes an automatic subliminal connection between the gangsters and spaghetti. In fact, whenever they seem to show some sort of organized crime figure in the movies or on television, they start playing Sicilian or Italian music or the theme from The Godfather, that type of thing. Now, in high school, I ran across an article about an organization called Murder Incorporated. That was a huge criminal syndicate based in New York City that was one of the most evil and powerful crime organizations that ever existed in the history of the United States. It was certainly the first kind of organization like this on this scale. that ever existed in the United States up to that time. It specialized in murder for hire and ran every kind of criminal racket, generating hundreds of deaths and theft of tens of millions of dollars. Thomas Dewey, who later became a presidential candidate, helped break up the organization. Now, the cast of characters of Murder Incorporated really amazed me, for they were almost all Jews. Its original members became the leaders of organized crime through the 1980s and even included crime boss Meyer Lansky. I then read that the biggest boss of organized crime since the time of Al Capone was Jewish. Now, I thought he would be Sicilian, as depicted in the movies. The book Lansky by Hank Messick documented a view of organized crime far different than I saw at my Saturday matinees. The top law enforcement sources and investigative reporters have agreed that Lansky was the master gangster of 20th century America. He had been the most powerful person in the American crime syndicates for four decades. Yet most Americans, who certainly know the names of Al Capone or John Dillinger, have never even heard of Meyer Lansky. The most notorious gangster was not Italian. In fact, he was Jewish and an ardent supporter of Zionism and Israel. Newsweek reported the following. Each year, Lansky and his underworld associates pour vast sums into Israeli bonds and Israeli philanthropies. As the daily Haaretz saw it, the government seemed afraid of losing the millions of dollars in illicit money first laundered in the mob-controlled institutions and funneled into Israeli businesses and industry. Investigative reporter Jack Anderson, who's now dead, talked about the issue in the Washington Post. Quote, "This underworld boodle, much of it raised from nefarious enterprises in the United States, is laundered before it arrives in Israel." In Lansky, Messick reveals a relationship between Israeli and American Jewish gangsters. And I quote, "Certainly Jewish gangsters have long and openly supported Jewish causes in the state of Israel. On the night Lansky's ex-partner Bugsy Siegel was executed, the Flamingo was taken over by Mo Sedgway. When asked how he so conveniently happened to be in Las Vegas, he explained that he was there to arrange a United Jewish Appeal Fund drive." You know, it's interesting how there's so much attacks on different organizations that defend European American heritage or any other heritage. It could be Mexican American heritage. And any organization that defends the heritage of a particular group who connected with some sort of organized crime or some sort of evil, and yet it's difficult for these people when you point out the fact that the ADL, many of these other Jewish organizations, had a lot of illicit gangster and criminal money come in to support them. Now, an illustration of how Jewish gangsters are treated in Hollywood media, one is only needs to look at the treatment according to the notorious gangster Bugsy Siegel in the film Bugsy. I hope some of you out there listening remember this film. It's a worthwhile film to see. It's a well-done film, but it'll give you quite an education. Now, the film downplayed Bugsy Siegel's Jewishness and portrayed one of America's most bloodthirsty and merciless murderers as a handsome, in fact, very, very handsomely Gentile, as played by Warren Beatty, very Anglo-Saxon looking. As a handsome and a playful romantic, a man of vision, and again a man played by the incredibly Nordic Aryan handsome Warren Beatty. Siegel was portrayed as a kind-hearted man who had a somewhat rough side. Even though I was familiar with the horrible deeds of the real Bugsy Siegel, while watching the movie, I found myself liking him. It did not surprise me to learn that the film had been written by James Toback and directed by Barry Levinson. You know, Messick sums it up, the man who wrote Lansky, sums it up very well when he writes, "The real leaders of crime have remained hidden while the nation's law enforcement agencies have chased minor punks. Research reveals that non-mafia leaders of crime have been hiding behind the vendetta-ridden society for decades. I have been smeared as anti-Semitic from coast to coast by gangsters who use religion as a cloak. Yes, you know, are you anti-Semitic to point out the fact that organized crime in the United States, even traditionally, was controlled by Jews, in fact, probably even more so than Italians in the 20th century, and yet almost all the movies portray the Italians as the ones behind organized crime. I think it's a double lie. I think it's a lie against Italians, and I think it's, again, they don't want to talk about Jews being involved in organized crime too much because it's certainly not the best of public relations. And having dominance of both the movies and movie reviews and major books in America, you know, the Jews are very conscious about their public relations. Now, in the final years of the 20th century and the beginnings of this century, the most dangerous criminal organization in the United States and all over the world is the Russian Mafia. Now, I want you to note that term. Much like the truth about the so-called Russian Revolution, the Russian Mafia is neither Russian nor Mafia. In a word, it's Jewish. It's a Jewish Mafia. Just as the media downplayed the huge role of Jewish organized crime in America throughout the 20th century, from Murder Incorporated to Meyer Lansky's Syndicate, so they've hidden from the American people the truth about the modern crime syndicate called the Organización, the most powerful criminal organization in the world. The members of the Organización come from parts of the former Soviet Empire, but they don't identify themselves as Russian, and certainly not as Mafia. They are exceedingly proud Jews who support Jewish causes and Israel with the same exuberance shown by Meyer Lansky and his cohorts. In the mid-70s, I read the book Hustling on Gorky Street, a book written by Yuri Brokin, a former Jewish pimp for one of the crime organizations in Russia. Konstantin Simas, a prominent Jewish lawyer for the organized crime, also wrote a very important book on the subject called USSR, The Corrupt Society. Now, both books make it clear the Jewish control of organized crime in the Soviet Union was extensive. Brokin brags that Jews are the only ones intelligent enough to run large-scale organized crime. Slavs, he suggests, are capable of only street crime. Of course, neither book mentions the advantages of Jewish criminals having allies in the heavily Jewish Soviet bureaucracy. When the communist regime fell, the already powerful Jewish crime groups grew dramatically, so much so that it could be said that no nation has ever suffered more in the grip of organized crime than Russia does even to this day. Even the former Russian president, Boris Yeltsin, was clearly under the thumb of organized crime, as evidenced by his appointment of Jewish organized crime figure Boris Berezovsky to Russia's National Security Council. Now, Yeltsin had to ultimately rescind Berezovsky's appointment after some of Russia's non-Jewish newspapers made an issue out of his crime connections. And Berezovsky is thought to be the richest person from Russia, followed closely by his fellow tribesman Vladimir Gazinsky, who has become the most powerful media boss. And Gazinsky now and Berezovsky are both on the run from Russia. Since the fall of the Soviet Union, the Jewish mob spread rapidly all over the world, and many authorities and law enforcement now consider its American branch to be the most powerful and dangerous crime organization in the history of America. After the murder of comedian Bill Cosby's son in Los Angeles, the press identified the alleged murderer as Mikhail Markusev, a Ukrainian immigrant, when in fact he was a Jewish member of the so-called Russian Mafia. Invariably, Jewish film and television producers portray the gangsters, the so-called Russian gangsters, as blonde, blue-eyed Russians, with not even a scant suggestion of their real Jewish identity. Now, casting these Jewish criminals as Russian is a double lie. It is inaccurate as to their Jewish origin, and it libels the Russian people. Again, the contradictions of Jewish power come to the fore. The masters of the media will not tolerate a truthful expose of Jewish perfidy. Yet they perpetuate false and pernicious images of other races, other peoples, other ethnic groups. Occasionally, though, the truth breaks out, even if it isn't in the movies, and usually it's only the Jews that have the ability to do that. Decent Jews, those I call righteous Jews, as Jews call those who betray Gentiles, righteous Gentiles. I call those Jews who tell the truth and try to clean up the Jewish people and the Jewish act, I call them righteous Jews. And anyway, in the Village Voice on May 26, 1998, one of these righteous Jews, by the name of Robert Friedman, ran a story called "The Most Dangerous Mobster in the World." And he writes, quote, "According to the FBI and Israeli intelligence, Semyon Mogilevich rules over an arms trafficking, money laundering, drug running, art smuggling, red mafia, the most dangerous mobster in the world. The leader of the red mafia is a 52-year-old Ukrainian-born Jew. He's a shadowy figure known as the Brainy Don. He holds an economics degree, and he's never been exposed by the media." Now, Robert Friedman, himself Jewish, writes that the Organizatsiya has even brought in ex-commandos from Israel as gunmen, and they are so ruthless that some policemen will not work the cases because they go right after a cop's family. Friedman goes on to write, and I quote, "Jewish organizations have lobbied the Justice Department to downplay the Russian mob, fearing that adverse publicity will jeopardize the mass exodus of Russian Jews to Israel." And my friends, as well it might. But what about the exodus of Russian mafia Jews to America? Obviously, there's no concern about that. For the interest of the Israeli state to augment its Jewish population and the sacred interests of the Jewish public relations, they're far more important than the rights of the people of the United States to defend themselves from this horrific Jewish organized crime syndicate. The Jewish 2% of the population in the United States is the dubious distinction of producing the lion's share of organized crime in America and in the 20th century, from Murder Incorporated to Lansky Syndicate to the Russian Mafia and men like Semyon Mogilevich. This hidden fact suggests the possibility of similar behavior in former times. Now, in looking into the history of Jewish criminal behavior, I found that many major historical figures and chroniclers who feared Jewish criminal organizations wrote about the problem. Now, if I could have the time, I could go into many more, but I'll just give you a few. Here's some of the historical figures who've exposed some of the Jewish involvement in organized criminality. Roman statesman Marcus Cicero. Flaccus, a friend who was a customs official, found himself persecuted for stopping the illegal flow of gold from Rome to Jerusalem. Cicero, in defending Flaccus, condemned such early smuggling and money laundering and the efforts to intimidate an honest public official from doing his duty. He says, "Softly, softly, I want none but the judges to hear me. The Jews have already got me in a fine mess, as they have many other gentlemen." First century Roman philosopher Lucius Seneca referred to the Jews as that, quote, "most criminal nation." Napoleon, he said, "The Jews are the master robbers of the modern age. They are the carrion birds of humanity. We ought to ban the Jews from commerce because they abuse it." Daniel Defoe, the man who wrote, of course, Robinson Crusoe, military memoirs of Captain George Carleton, Roxana. He says, he refers to Jews as greedy and unprincipled, criminal Jews whose stock and trade is the fence of stolen articles. William Frine, a Puritan writer opposing Cromwell's efforts to allow the Jews back in England, described Jewish offenses as usuries and deceits, clippings, and falsifying monies. And Charles Dickens, of course, the famous Charles Dickens. Most of us listening have read Oliver Twist and some of the great novels of Dickens. He had the classic characterization of the criminal Jew, Fagin, in Oliver Twist. The character would enlist Gentile children to pickpocketry and assorted similar criminal enterprises. And of course, Tacitus, the famous Roman historian, among themselves, they're inflexibly honest and ever ready to show compassion, though they regard the rest of mankind with all the hatred of enemies. Now, there's much evidence of Jewish-dominated criminal underworld activities that have existed for hundreds of years. One of the most amazing things I discovered was a book published at the time of a Protestant reformer, Martin Luther. Europe was so plagued by organized crime that the authorities felt compelled to publish a lexicon of criminal terms. Now, Luther supported his publication as a means of fighting crime and wrote an introduction to the lexicon in which he noted that the vocabulary of criminals was full of Hebrew words. In the preface, Luther wrote, quote, "I consider it useful that this book be widely read, so that it may be seen and understood how the devil rules this world, so that men may be wise against him. It is true that this Rothweische Sprache, underworld slang, comes from the Jews, for it contains many Hebrew words, and those who know Hebrew well observe." Now, the fact that so few Gentiles are aware of the long and integral relationship between Jews and organized crime is due to their enormous power in media. And it's a power that shields people from the image that Italians have in relation to the media. It is perhaps typified in the interconnectivity of Jewish organized crime in Russia and Jewish media power there. For instance, two of the leading organized crime figures there are Berezovsky and Vladimir Gazinsky. Both are media moguls in Russia, having enormous power in TV, radio, newspapers, and magazines. Now, Gazinsky was removed from some of that power. However, he still has interest and power in Russia. He was indicted by the Russian Prosecutor's Office for corruption and money laundering. In 1999, Berezovsky seized control of Moscow's TV6 television station, Russia's premier daily newspaper, the Kommersant. And, by the way, when he got control of that newspaper, he promptly fired its editor, Raf Shakarov, who said that his ouster is an attempt to curb often critical coverage of the tycoon's business and political activities. Forbes magazine published a scathing article about Berezovsky entitled, quote, "The Godfather of the Kremlin," with no byline for fear of violence against its authors. The magazine's editor, James Michael, said that Berezovsky stands tall as one of the most powerful men in Russia. Behind him lies a trail of corpses, uncollected debt, and competitors terrified for their lives. The Forbes magazine article asserted, "Assassination is a tool of business competition. Scores of business leaders and media personalities have been killed. Berezovsky controls Russia's biggest TV network. His control was solidified shortly after. The first chamber of the network was assassinated gangland style. Berezovsky was immediately fingered by the police as a key suspect, but the murder remains unsolved 2 years later. Since the Russian business environment today that the men at the top have used for the shadowy army of killers and thugs who work further down in the scale of corruption, running prostitute and protection rackets." Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the same Berezovsky who in 1996 became a member of the Kremlin Security Council and privy to the most sensitive information of Russia. It was also revealed by a Moscow Times newspaper that Putin used to take his holidays at Berezovsky's summer home in Moscow. Yet, even for Putin, Berezovsky's blatant murder and racketeering was too much. And the Russian prosecutor is now pursuing Berezovsky for criminal indictment. Both Berezovsky and Gazinsky now are on the run from authorities and screaming that they are simply victims of, quote, anti-Semitism. Are you starting to get the idea of what anti-Semitism is, ladies and gentlemen? You know, it's anybody who dares to challenge some of the negative aspects of some Jewish organized power. And by the way, Putin, ever since he's gone against some of these Jewish oligarchs like Berezovsky and Gazinsky, has been the victim of unrelenting press attacks. Khodorkovsky is another good example of one of these Jewish robber barons, an organized criminal who's now in prison in Russia, and he stole at least 300, you know, billion, not million, but billion dollars, ladies and gentlemen, $300 billion, and the media consistently around the world. Again, that same brotherhood of Jewish heritage, of Jewish descent, of Jewish interests, you know, they protect their own, and they act like the prosecution of Khodorkovsky is simply a matter of, it's going against business. And it's an example of how terrible poor Mr. Putin is. Now, Fortune magazine ran an article entitled "Russia's Robber Barons." They profiled 10 of the most important Russian business tycoons and mobsters of catapulted to economic dominance in Russia with the collapse of communism. And by the way, they acquired this wealth in about three years. They acquired these trillions of dollars of wealth, the resources of Russia, obviously not by earning it or doing great work, but through extortion, through robbery, through bribery, murder, you name it. Now, who are the men? Well, they included Guzinski, Berezovsky, Boris Haidt, Mikhail Friedman, Vladimir Vinogradov, Vladimir Potanin, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, Alexander Smolensky, Pyotr Avin, and a few others. For instance, the gentleman who owns one of the biggest football teams now in Britain. Now, it's estimated that more than 50% of Russia's raw wealth is owned by, by the way, his name is Abramovich. So it's estimated that more than 50% of Russia's raw wealth is owned by these 10 men. That's 10 of the 11 of the major oligarchs being Jews. Now, while the average Russian barely survives on less than an average of $200 or $300 a month, enormous wealth and power has been concentrated in the hands of a tiny group of men loyal not to the Russian people, but only to their tribe. And these men certainly did not earn this vast wealth. They accumulated in 3 or 4 years after the demise of communism. It was acquired through, it takes you a little longer than that to build up businesses worth that much. It was acquired through fraud and corruption, bribery, theft, murder. Now, the world knows very little about the Jewish character of this theft of practically an entire nation, because the Jewish media in Russia and the rest of the world has chosen to keep this vital fact from our consciousness. How many movies have you seen recently about Russian organized criminal behavior, which is controlled almost entirely by Jews? Again, all we hear is the media defending Jewish criminals who are being prosecuted in Russia today. Ladies and gentlemen, a perfect example of this is Khodorkovsky's criminal mates, where they have fled to Israel. And also a perfect example of this is how that the Israelis and the Jewish supremacists, they kind of rub it in our faces in Israel. There's a very popular television program called, of all things, The Oligarchs. And it's about all the Jewish oligarchs in Russia, you know, having billions and trillions of dollars and living the high life and all the adventures and so forth they have. And this is very popular in Israel, and it's one of the big standing jokes. I mean, it's like, well, of course, Jews are entitled to do this kind of behavior. Just as Guzinski screamed, and by the way, Guzinski, the gangster I talked about earlier, he was head of the Jewish community in Russia. That's right. He was head of the Russian Jewish Congress. And how can it be that these men steal and kill and bribe? How do they get asylum in Western countries that are supposed to be law-abiding, like England and France and Spain and the United States, for that matter? You know, why? Because, again, it's that same brotherhood that exists, it's been existing for literally thousands of years, ladies and gentlemen, that puts the interest of the Jewish people over anything else. These are some of the causes of anti-Semitism, what we call anti-Semitism. And I tell you, there are many Jews who are concerned about it, like Mr. Friedman that wrote the article, The Village Voice. I'm going to talk to you tomorrow about the slave trade, the history of the slave trade, both in the American colonies, in Europe, and around the world, also white slavery tomorrow. I'm going to quote, in fact, from another very brave Jew by the name of Spector, who wrote some exposés of the international slave trade, and he points out how this, the so-called white slave trade, how this has been centered in Israel, and it's one of the greatest human trafficking atrocities of all kind, one of the greatest human tragedies. Literally millions of Eastern European women have been literally enslaved, degraded, their lives destroyed by these Jewish gangsters. And yet very, very little is talked about this, and certainly not about the Jewish nature of it in terms of the American press. There are no movies made about the horror that so many beautiful women go through, lured by promises of good jobs overseas, taken out of a terrible economy, and then literally stripped, raped, drugged, and put on the auction block like nude pieces of filth, like animals, and then sold at auction just as slaves were sold centuries before. This goes on today, right now, in our modern world. It's a terrible atrocity. And I'll talk about this tomorrow. We have got to get to a point, ladies and gentlemen, where we begin to investigate some of these issues. And I tell you, the Jewish community has got to confront these things, as the men I talk about here. It's not anti-Semitism to talk about the role, the disproportionate role of Jews in organized crime, in slavery, and in white slavery. And, you know, we talked earlier, and in one of my previous broadcasts, I talked about how that when the Jews get in high positions, they have many friends and they're a close network. That when you know what a government's going to do in advance, obviously you have the opportunity to make literally billions of dollars, because the government is the greatest, has the greatest impact on business, on stocks, on property of any organization. Just when a government changes its exchange rate or a government changes an interest rate, and somebody's got to know about these things ahead of time. And Berezovsky, this criminal talked about in Fortune magazine in the United States of America, he was literally sitting at the pinnacle of the internal security of the Russian state. And you can imagine the theft and the bribery and the opportunities that existed there for he and for his other Jewish comrades and confederates. That's some of the nature. That's why there's been what's been called anti-Semitism. I don't call myself an anti-Semite. I don't promote what's called anti-Semitism. But I do understand why there's been opposition to some of the organized Jewry. And I do believe that the leadership of Jewry has not been responsible enough to curtail these attitudes. And I think these attitudes in many ways have been sponsored and promoted by some of the fundamental clauses in Judaism. As again, I can prove, as earlier in the last few days, I quoted a lot of the Chabad Lubavitch movement, which is a prominent Jewish movement. And in there they talk about how Gentiles literally are animals, and that the Gentiles' purpose is to serve Jews. You see, you don't have to go too far from that to understand the approval of things such as organized crime and the like. Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, tomorrow night I'll be talking about the anti-Semitism in regard to the Jewish control historically of slavery, including the African slave trade of the colonies, including European slavery, and in terms of a terrible slavery that's going on right now today across Europe and the world, and that's called the white slave trade. And it's another terrible process that's affecting the lives of millions of really the angels of our people and our heritage. And it's something that we must be dedicated to putting a stop to. And it's something that we must be aware of the origins of this extreme, extreme degradation of humanity and the most basic and most important human rights. The human right to live and the right to not be enslaved and not be degraded with unspeakable types of human subjugation. Thanks so much, and I'll certainly be with you tomorrow. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukeworldwide.com.